Attention Tampa. Your neighbors are talking about it. Your coworkers are talking about it. Even your broker is talking about it.
Hey, Phil, I'm a big fan of yours. Great teacher.
Phil, thank you very much. I personally want to thank you for saving me a fortune at the end of 05.
Never miss your show, and if a house is on fire, I don't leave till the show is over.
You've been really great for me. I've been with you for about 5 years, and I've just moved to a new level of trading.
Find out what everybody's talking about. Join Phil Grandy and Phil's Gang. 3 to 4 on Tampa's Talk Radio 860 WGUL. And at philsgang.com.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we're tackling kids with chest pains, murmurs, and holes in the heart, with guest expert pediatric cardiologist Dr. J. Blaine John, clinical assistant and professor of pediatrics at USF here in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with over 1,000 women attending during each of our last two events, with a combined 7,500 hours of education during those 2 days, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result, better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And you may, just as an aside, you may read some educational articles appearing in every issue of the Tampa Bay Women's newspaper with upcoming radio show topics as well. The Tampa Bay Women's newspaper is free and is found at over 3,000 Tampa Bay area locations, such as medical offices, healthcare clubs, specialty organic grocery stores, hair and beauty salons, etc. The articles are educational, informational, and resourceful. And once again, today we are tackling kids with chest pains, murmurs, and holes in the heart with Dr. Blaine John. Dr. John is a native Floridian, born and raised here in Pensacola, Florida. He was awarded his Bachelor of Science degree from Davidson College in North Carolina, where he designed his own major in medical humanities. He graduated cum laude as a member of Phi Beta Kappa, received his medical degree from Jefferson Medical College in Philadelphia, graduating with honors as a member of the Alpha Omega Alpha. Dr. John then received the MAP Reader's Digest International Fellowship and Christian Medical Society's Western Fellowship for his medical missionary work in Zambia, Africa. Dr. John then returned to Florida and completed a pediatrics residency at the University of Florida. He trained in pediatric cardiology at the Baylor College of Medicine, where he then completed advanced training in non-invasive and fetal cardiology. Blaine's clinical interests include echocardiography, fetal cardiology, and intensive care cardiology. He also enjoys time teaching the medical students and residents of USF. He's board certified in pediatric cardiology and is the proud father of three children. Congratulations on that, Blaine.
Why, thank you.
And welcome here today. This is the first of two radio shows we're tackling pediatric cardiology today and again on October 10th, when we're focusing more on palpitations and abnormal rhythms of the child with difficulties, cardiac difficulties. But again, any question you have today on any aspect of heart disease or symptoms that may be related to heart in children, please take the opportunity, make the phone call, ask your question. And the phone number to make that call is 289-1860. 289-1860 here in Hillsborough County, outside of Hillsborough County. And for those that are streaming this online, it is toll-free, 877-969-8600. Once again, 877-969-8600. So let's begin, Blaine, with pediatric cardiology. Let's talk about the structure of the heart and what kind of abnormalities. What is a congenital heart defect? Let's start there.
Well, that's a great first question to start with. A congenital heart defect, by definition, is any defect in the heart that someone is born with. It's not like the heart attacks or coronary artery problems that many Americans have in their 50s, 60s, 70s, but a congenital defect is actually something you have from the second you're born onward.
Is it more of a structural abnormality?
Usually it is a structural abnormality, things like abnormal holes in the heart, valves that are leaking, and some babies are even born missing heart chambers. The normal heart has four chambers in it, and often we see children born with very complex defects.
Can you give a brief overview of the four chambers of the heart, what the valves do, and what the septum are?
No problem. The human heart has four chambers in it, two top chambers and two bottom chambers. There's a right side of the heart and a left side of the heart. On the right side, you have the right atrium, which is the top chamber, and the right ventricle, which is the bottom chamber. The ventricles are the pumping chambers of the heart. Now, the right side of the heart basically handles the blue blood that needs to be oxygenated, whereas the left side of the heart handles the red blood that has oxygen already in it. So the blood comes back from the head and body and enters the right ventricle, which pumps the blood out into the lungs. There, this blue blood becomes red blood, comes back into the left atrium, that's the left-sided top chamber, goes into the left ventricle, and the left ventricle pumps that red blood out to the head and to the body. Now, throughout this process, there are actually four main valves inside the human heart. On the right side, you have the tricuspid valve, which is in between the right atrium and right ventricle. And then you have the pulmonary valve, which is between the right ventricle and the lungs. And these are one-way valves that keep the blue blood flowing towards the lungs. On the left side of the heart, you have the mitral valve between the left atrium and the left ventricle, and you have the aortic valve between the left ventricle and the aorta, which is the major blood vessel carrying all the red blood out to the body. These are also one-way valves. They keep the red blood flowing away from the lungs and out to the body where it belongs.
In a normal circumstance, they can completely occlude any possibility of leakage back into the heart or into the chamber from which the blood came from.
That's exactly correct. Normally, these valves are just very thin tissue leaflets that let the blood flow nicely in the correct direction, but they're one way. They don't let the blood flow backwards.
So these valves open and close with each heartbeat?
Exactly.
All right. And before we move on to the septum, what per, from your sense, what percentage of structural defects involve these valves that you see?
Probably about half of the structural defects that we see involve the valves, and about half of the defects that we see involve the structure that you mentioned, the septum.
Okay. And regarding the half of the valves, half the abnormalities you see are valves, is there a particular one valve that or two of these valves that provide most of the clinical problems you see?
It's pretty interesting. We see both the right and left side of the heart equally affected. And what's pretty fascinating is if, let's say, the tricuspid valve is affected so that there's no blood flowing from the right atrium to the right ventricle, then there's not going to be a lot of blood flowing across the pulmonary valve, and it will also become affected, especially in fetal life when the heart is just forming.
I see. So it's kind of a domino effect, potentially.
Exactly correct.
Okay. And on the left side, I know that kids can be born with stenosis or narrowing of a heart, of a valve, aortic valve. What are some of the other valvular problems that you see?
One of the most common congenital heart defects is actually a bicuspid aortic valve. The aortic valve normally has three tiny thin leaflets that open and close, and keep the blood flowing in the correct direction. One of the most common defects is the bicuspid aortic valve, which only has two leaflets. Fortunately, the vast, vast majority of time when we do detect a bicuspid aortic valve, it's actually functioning perfectly fine. But we do monitor these patients over the years to make sure that the valve doesn't start to leak or it doesn't become stenotic, which is too tight.
All right, very good. And so that, so would you say that's the most common thing you see as far as a valvular problem?
That is the most common valvular problem that we will see.
Let's move on to the septum. What are the septa and what they do and what kind of problems you see with them?
Now, septum actually is from a Latin word meaning wall. So the septum is just the wall in between the left and right sides of the heart. You have an atrial septum that's in between the left and right atrium, and you have a ventricular septum that's in between the left and right ventricle. So you have these two walls in the heart that are supposed to divide the red and blue blood. Now, if you have a hole, a quote-unquote hole in the heart that people often talk about, this is actually referring to a defect or a hole in one of the septa. It can be an atrial septal defect, which is a hole between the left and right atrium, or a ventricular septal defect, also known as a VSD, which is a hole between the left and right ventricles.
And this accounts for the other approximately 50% of the pathology you see.
Yes, we see septal defects are indeed very common.
And what of the valvular problems and the septal problems? Let's talk about how patients may, what kind of symptoms patients may have that would bring them to see you.
That's another great question. A lot of times, septal defects, especially ventricular septal defects, will present in the newborn period as a murmur. Now, a murmur is just an extra sound that the heart makes. The heart normally goes lub-dub, lub-dub, and those sounds are created by the valves closing inside the heart. If you also hear an additional sound, this is most commonly a murmur. It's a blowing sound due to the blood flowing abnormally, kind of like if you put your finger over a garden hose nozzle, you create this psh, and that's what we'll hear, a lub-psh-dub, lub-psh-dub, and that's a murmur. So when a pediatrician is evaluating a newborn baby, if they hear a murmur, they'll actually, a lot of times, ask us for a consult, and we'll do echocardiography and listen to the child and find defects such as a ventricular septal defect. So these are picked up in the newborn period.
Okay.
Atrial septal defects, on the other hand, if you will, they're a little bit sneakier. Atrial septal defects don't normally create a murmur or any problems in the newborn period, and those aren't usually detected until the child is much older, usually in the 8 to 12-year range. Mm. And they can also create a murmur, but it's a slightly different sound, usually a lot softer.
So listening to the chest wall, to the heart, you can get some idea of what type of murmur there is, because there are other things that cause murmurs too besides septal defects, correct?
Correct, absolutely. With careful listening or auscultation to the baby's heart, most of the time you can figure out exactly what defect is present. You can have septal defects, like we've talked about, in the atria or ventricles, but also valve problems create murmurs. All four valves in the heart can be too tight, which we call stenosis, or these valves can leak, which we call regurgitation. And each valve being too tight or leaking will create a slightly different murmur. This, once we hear it, the diagnosis is then confirmed with an echocardiogram, which is ultrasound pictures of the heart.
And let's start right here and ask make the proviso that this is a safe tested run. Describe echocardiogram for us. And again, if there's anyone out there who doesn't understand it, why it's so safe.
Well, echocardiography is a wonderful tool that we have in pediatric cardiology. It's based upon ultrasound, which is basically sonar like submarines use. Instead of using something like X-rays and radiation, which in high doses can be harmful, we use sound waves or ultrasound. These sound waves are emitted from a transducer, much like a microphone would appear, that we place directly on the baby's chest wall. Doesn't hurt him one little bit, and the sound waves will pass harmlessly through the body. Some of them are reflected backwards towards this transducer or microphone, and the echocardiography machine can then take these reflected sound waves and give us live images or pictures of the heart.
Okay, excellent. So that'll help definitively demonstrate where a structural abnormality would be.
That is correct. And if there are some smaller structures that we do have trouble imaging with ultrasound, if we are having problems with that, then we can actually go on and do more invasive testing, things like a heart catheterization, if we need to. But the vast, vast majority of the time, all we need is our echocardiogram and our careful examination.
So for moms and dads that are listening out there right now, what types of complaints or observations that they may have made about their kids should bring to mind the possibility that there may be a heart issue at play?
Well, most often our chief complaints or the reasons that our patients come in, most often it will be either a murmur, or the murmur, of course, being heard by the pediatrician, or it'll be a complaint that the patient is having. Some of the most common complaints we'll see children for are chest pain, palpitations, or syncope, which is fainting.
Okay. Now, let's dive into this chest pain. Again, now before I go any further, I want to remind everybody that now pick up the phone and call with your questions on this topic or any of these topics regarding pediatric cardiology, kids' hearts, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County, 289-1860. Everywhere else outside of Hillsborough County, it's area code toll-free, 877-969-8600. And so, what types of how do you evaluate chest pain? If a mom, you know, when should a mom be concerned that that a chest pain in their child could be heart-related?
Well, chest pain is actually somewhat common. I think all of us during the time we were growing up complain of a chest pain at some time or another. But a lot of times what they are describing as chest pain is something like a cramp or a stitch in your side that you get with running very hard or things like that. Other things that we see that's described by children as chest pain can be reflux or agita, which is more of a stomach type problem than an actual heart problem. Fortunately, in children, chest pain caused by a heart abnormality is actually exceedingly, exceedingly rare. Now, the opposite is true in adults. A 60-year-old male or female with crushing chest pain, usually that's going to be a problem with the heart. In a child that's complaining of chest pain, usually it's not a problem with the heart, but it's definitely something parents should pay attention to and first discuss it with their pediatrician, and if they're concerned, absolutely we'll check these children out and make sure there's not a problem with the heart.
Okay. And I was going to say, you know, if a child complains of chest pain, ask them to point to where the pain is, but of course now having four kids myself, and you have three kids, of course, we know that sometimes they will just find that entertaining, and they may point to any part of the body at all when you ask them where the chest pain is located. So,
absolutely.
Well, let's talk about the other symptoms that a patient, that a child may demonstrate without really complaining. Maybe the ease of fatigue. You mentioned, of course, fainting, which is quite obviously something wrong there. But how about easy fatigue? Does that fall in the category of a potential heart problem?
Absolutely. Let me mention one thing about chest pain first. One of the red flags that should always alert a parent, if a child is complaining of chest pain with exercise, that's something particularly that they should pay close attention to. Now, you had also asked about fatigue. Interestingly, fatigue is something that you can not only see in a toddler or an 8-year-old running around and playing, but fatigue we can also see in babies. One of the most exhausting things a baby can do is feed. And if you have a little baby that's having a lot of trouble feeding instead of being able to take down their bottle in the normal 10, 15 minutes, if babies are taking 45, 50 minutes to do a normal feeding, they're getting sweaty, they're breathing fast with just feeding, that's a warning. They might indeed have a heart defect. Mm. With older children, the easiest way to tell are they having fatigue is just asking the simple question, are they able to keep up with their peers, children like them of the same age? You know, when they run around in the park, and especially in Florida, if it's 98 degrees and they're out playing for 2 hours in the park, absolutely, I expect them to be a little fatigued. But if they're the child that's pooping out a lot earlier than everybody else in their class, that's something that you do need to pay attention to.
Mm. Okay. And real briefly now, let's tie the fatigue or the syncope, which is fainting, with the earlier discussion of the abnormalities of the heart, where you mentioned how the septal defects and the valvular defects. How does that relate to the complaints?
It's actually another very good question. Fatigue usually comes from ex-